At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor in southern New England. Jeremy Zachas is in New South Wales. And ashes are the contest. Is the contest. Let's see. Ashes, would that be plural? No, it's singular. Ashes is the contest that is occasioned every year and a half between Australia and England, dating back to the 19th century when England routinely mocked Australia in all departments, especially in cricket, the national sport. Ashes, the last two Ashes, have been decided in Australia's favor. So England, that is traveling to Australia for the Ashes, which begin at the end of the calendar year, is anticipating a victory in some fashion. And it's time to choose to entertain the Ashes team. How do they do it, Jeremy? You've got so many good players, and they all have different skill sets.
Really, it's by trial and error. And what I mean by trial and error is that leading up to the Ashes, we have a large program of a lot of international test cricket where Australian teams are going out playing against the English, playing against the West Indies, playing against the Indians and the Pakistanis. And we have a lot of teams that are going out and effectively playing an Ashes type of format right throughout the year, which means that we can actually start to test players and start to put players up that we're anticipating will be in the Ashes squad. So what we typically are seeing right now is that in a lot of our test series matches, a lot of the teams that are being selected have maybe about 3 or 4 players that are likely to actually go on to the Ashes series at the very end of the year. And now these players are normally the ones that are either typically batting and bowling first or are the ones that are getting the most exposure on the cricket ground, because the selectors are watching keenly how they go against all these different teams to see if they fit the Ashes side. But the big thing is the teams that are really being, I guess, watched are the teams that are going to go against England in the various test seasons before they get to the Ashes at the end of the year, because that may tell us exactly what England's trying to do as well. Because you can imagine on the English side, a lot of their test series right now and test games are probably full of some of their selected Ashes players as well. So really, John, it's pretty much almost like having an audition and a tryout that lasts almost an entire year before getting to the Ashes. But I guess in some ways we are starting to already see some names thrown around there, like Mitch Marshall and a few of the old favourites who are all-rounders in the Australian team of the previous Ashes, which is telling us that the Australian Ashes team is effectively going to be what's called an all-rounder side, which is saying in some ways that we're expecting that maybe Britain is actually looking to ditch some of those baseball tactics that they've been using over the last couple of Ashes series, which requires a very aggressive kind of team, which doesn't really use all-rounders, more like pacemen who can bowl really fast and kind of very complex bowlers, in favour for actually going back to a more traditional cricket side. So really, John, the answer is that really it's going to be trial and error throughout the year, and I can guarantee to as we see more of the British test teams coming out and they show some of their tactics that they might use for Ashes, we're probably going to have a lot of decision calls about who's going to be in our Ashes series change as it goes. But really, we're just at the beginning of the journey, but it is going to be at least maybe 6 to 7 months of watching and waiting and seeing how our teams do. And then from there, we shall start to see exactly who's going to be in our grand Ashes side.
Are your talks, your sports talk radio, are they obsessed with the choices? Do they debate them all night? What happens?
They do. In fact, they're already starting to debate them all night. In fact, we're starting to see almost some criticisms of some of the selectors' hints at who they're going to choose for the Ashes because, of course, commentators being commentators always want to second-guess the actual people in power on the selection boards. And there's a bit of concern, I guess you could say, right now that Australia may be about to put in what's called an all-rounder team, as I described, a team that can bowl and bat pretty much at the middle level. They're not really strong on offense or strong on defense, but just good all-rounders, saying that if, say, England puts in a team that's highly defensive or even highly offensive, so more a baseball team, An all-rounded team may not be the best way to go. But of course, the commentators love to have something to talk about, so they're going to pretty much give some kind of criticism about any selection that's made. But honestly, in reality, it's too far ahead, but it is good. It's really a part of the psychological warfare that we have called Ashes that starts effectively. We are now over 6 months away or 7 months away from the actual games themselves. So this is going to be a long burn, but honestly, the media is the best place to watch it. As I always like to say, cricket doesn't just happen on the ground. It also happens off the field in the media. And the Ashes years are the best years because you get some of the best discussions you'll ever see.
The Queensland Cricket Board. I know it exists. You've entertained me with the fact that there really is such a thing. And it, a week ago, chastised two very good cricket players for talking about another cricket player who had skipped an event in order to watch an F1 contest of Formula One. Is there an update on that? Are they still suspended or chastised? Have they appealed?
Well, funnily enough, they're not suspended anymore on the podcast, which is called Willow Talkers. The two main presenters there, including Alicia Healy, the women's test cricket side captain, they're not suspended. And actually, the reality was they weren't actually suspended from the podcast. They were told they just couldn't talk about that particular event, which means that effectively they didn't turn up and do the podcast on that day. But you know what, John? Cricket being cricket, they're already moving on. They've already moved on to the latest round of effectively the women's side, for example, in international cricket. The Australian women's side just beat England 2-0 in what's a five-game series and effectively looking to beat them 3-0 in the next game over the next couple of days. So already cricket is a very fickle thing. Already forgotten about the controversy that one of the strongest quick cricket players in Queensland decided to play hooky and go down and watch the Formula One racing instead of playing a significant match against South Australia. Already totally forgotten. We're already now moving on to the fact that I think we're beating the English quite decisively there in the Women's League. And I dare say we're waiting for that next controversy, which is probably only a few days away knowing cricket. So it's funny. It really is a fickle thing, John. We're already moving on.
Is there a New South Wales Cricket Board?
There is. In fact, I think it might be called the Sydney Cricket Board, if I remember correctly, because, of course, Sydney is the only thing in New South Wales, as we like to think. But every single state actually does have a cricket board. So, yes, there certainly is one here in New South Wales.
And who appoints the cricket board? Is this a government thing or is this the teams come together, the owners? A cricket board seems so strange. Its duties must be to make sure the playing field is level and well cared for. I'm guessing here that the schedule is put out clearly, that everybody's balanced, that there if there are any complaints about players, is that the sort of thing that it does?
That's exactly right. The board itself actually appoints its new board member. So it's effectively run like a corporation. Nearly everyone on the board has played professional cricket at some point at the more senior levels, but you do have segments of the board which are effectively been groundskeepers all their life or have been on the technical side and the support side. So they're the ones that maintain the grounds, maintain the ability for cricket to be played, including some of the umpires who've been career umpires as well. So you do have that mix of players and the support staff all on the boards as well. There is some element of government control insofar as a lot of the cricket in any state does require government grants, especially at the more junior level. So there is government representation, but I'm almost certain that that doesn't actually impact on how the board is chosen. It's just on how the board interacts with the governments itself. So it's a very highly political appointment. If you get on any of the cricket boards, you've done very well in your cricket career and at least you've made some kind of mark. But it's very serious, but it's very much run like a corporation because, of course, at the end of the day too, cricket does need to turn over a profit for it to exist for the next year and effectively for the government grants to keep coming. So you can imagine just how political it is. So it is quite a formidable entity within itself.
Jeremy Zakas in New South Wales. Yes, there is an update on Dallas and the Magpie families. This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.
Chances are you've been to the doctor recently, and you probably handed over your insurance, your ID, and even your social security number. Your doctor is just one of many places that has your personal info. And if any of them accidentally expose your details, you could be at risk for identity theft. LifeLock monitors millions of data points a second. If you become a victim, they'll fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.